Cast. I'm your host, Chris Cesarano, and this week I'm joined by Rika.
Hey.
And Wesley.
Hello.
This week we're going to be discussing the Steam sale. This is actually the first time I've really done a Steam sale because, as many of you know, I'm more or less a console gamer, so when Steam has stuff on sale, I don't pay attention, but this time I am, and it's kind of unfortunate in its fortunateness. But I guess to start with, you know, Wesley, is this a regular thing for you? You seem to be more of a PC gamer than I am.
Every 6 months.
Like clockwork.
Like, I'm like the kind of guy who like follows it. Like, you know, there were rumors of it starting on the 19th of June, like a month ago. Some developers leaked some stuff onto Reddit. And actually, it was onto NeoGAF, and then it was reposted on Reddit. So, like, we had a pretty good idea when it was starting and when it was going to end, and sort of planned my video game spending around that. And so, too much.
All right, and how about you, Rika?
So I'm sort of a recovering Steam sailor. A few years ago, I was like insanely into it, but I bought a bunch of games, and so now basically every time it comes out, I'm disappointed because I already have most of the games that I wanted, you know. And I guess I'm kind of the opposite of you because I'm mostly a PC gamer, but recently I've got into I just got PlayStation Network and PlayStation Plus, so I've kind of got into like playing things from my couch instead of the computer desk. So I'm watching the PSN sales right now, as well as the Steam sales.
Well, that's the thing. PlayStation Plus is actually doing pretty decently. Like, they really do gouge some of the prices for some of the items they put up. Like, I think Tales of Zillia ended up being pretty cheap when I grabbed it and stuff. So I think Sony right now is doing a really good job of trying to imitate the success of the Steam sale, but I don't know if I see it so much from Microsoft or Nintendo yet. I'm not really familiar with Microsoft really doing many, or at least neither one of them do the deep gouges of pricing. So Steam really does have, and they've got it down to a system, because just having the, you know, check back in 8 hours to see new games pop up, you're just sitting there like eager, you're waiting for the next thing to come out.
Like, I know I'm probably not gonna buy anything this time, or maybe I'll buy one or two games, but I was like, I just got back from a trip with my mom, so we were in the middle of nowhere, and I was like hunting for a place where I could stand, where I would have enough 3G to check the Steam sales on my phone.
It's really interesting because you see other places online trying to do similar sorts of sales, like GOG.com has been doing sales for the last couple weeks. Green Man Gaming does something similar, but they don't seem to capture that magic that really, like the whole gaming PC group of people is like really excited for the Steam sale. Whereas, you know, really the deals on these other sites are just as good or comparable at least, but people really focus in on the Steam sale.
I think maybe part of that is simply because of the fact that, I mean, this is just my guess too, that, I mean, Steam is where all of your stuff already is. I mean, I do find that actually pretty convenient that I can just go into library, go to my installed games, and there you go, just, there's all this stuff you can play, or something like that, and it does remove some of the hassle that I remember having with PC gaming once upon a time ago. It does kind of add that sort of framework you get with the Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3, where, you know, you open up the program and it's like, oh, by the way, we just got a patch for you. There you go. You don't even have to patch your software now because we did it for you. And it does stuff like that. So Steam is incredibly convenient. I have not used Good Old Games before or Green Man Gaming. I've heard of both of them, but I haven't really used them, so I don't know. I just know, what is it, Good Old Games is always DRM-free?
Yes.
There you go. So that's the advantage there, because Steam is technically still a form of DRM, but it's also got the latest stuff, too, and maybe that's part of it. Does Good Old Games have new stuff, too, or is it mostly just old stuff?
Yeah, they have some new stuff. A lot of the indie-type games will be on there for DRM-free. And then like things like The Witcher 3... just because the company who makes The Witcher 3 also owns Good Old Games, so
that makes a lot. That does not surprise me.
Yeah.
Green Man Gaming, I know, is like a site a lot of people use for new upcoming PC games as well. So that doesn't surprise me either. as I said, like Steam, and also, let's face it, Steam, now, they evidently, this isn't the first time they've done it. I wasn't aware of this whole metagame thing. I felt it was new, but evidently they've been doing this for different sales.
So they've been doing these big holiday sales, big holiday and summer sales since like 2008 or 9, I want to say. But the metagames didn't come in until, oh man, it must have been like 2011 when the first metagame was, I'm pretty sure it was Lumps of Coal at Christmas. And this was just when Steam had sort of brought out the TF2 marketplace where you could craft items into other items. And what you could do is through earning achievements or through playing games, you earned Lumps of Coal. And when you got 7 of them, you could craft them into either a game. What you would get out the other side is a game or a coupon that could be used during the sale. And so the problem was is people really latched onto that idea. So people basically botted the metagame. So they would create a bunch of different accounts and buy all the cheap games to then get the Lumps of Coal to then get the game from that account, from that crafting, and then send it to their main account. So halfway through the sale, they actually ran out of game keys to give away, which caused a big hubbub.
Cheat on that Steam sale, actually.
I didn't. You were the problem.
Yeah. Well, and I was kind of just like, oh, what is this weird metagame thing? And so I didn't buy things on other accounts. I did. There was some action that you could take, I can't remember what it was, like some social action. And I had a bunch of Steam accounts that I used for work. So I just, you know.
So, and ever since then, there's always been a metagame on these large sales. For the last several, it's been this, I guess it would have been summer last year was the first time they did the cards, which is sort of their focus now. This seems to be a new thing. Yeah, they really use it to push new interesting features with Steam. Like I want to say like a year and a half ago for the Christmas sale, they did a lot with the community features. So like you'd share a video, you know, update your profile and stuff to gain points in the metagame. But they've been it's amazing. Like if you do the math on how much money they're making from the cards, it's absurd.
Yeah, I imagine that.
Because there was a point, especially early in the sale, where the metagame cards from this sale were going for like 50 cents a piece. Of which Steam takes 15%. And there were roughly 2,000 of them selling per hour. So if you do the math on that, it gets a little crazy.
Yeah, I sold actually quite a bunch of cards that were in my inventory to help, you know, discount games just a little bit more. And, it still amazed me that by Tuesday, I put up a card for Killing Floor or something. And, as soon as I put it up, bam, right over in my email, it's like, by the way, you just sold a card. And it's like, I just put that up. That someone must have been sniping for just cards to buy.
It's really interesting. Because I was in the beta for the card, for the trading card program. And at the beginning, obviously, cards were going for a lot more before there was a lot more supply. But it's been a really interesting sort of thing to look at over time. It's grown so huge. So many games do it because apparently some of the proceeds from the card sales actually go back to the developer of the game.
Oh, wow, really?
So, yeah, it's 15% gets taken out when you sell it on the market. And I want to say 10% of that goes to the developer. This is how Steam gets the developers to buy into this. And so it's been crazy, how much items move on the market, and not just trading cards, every item. Valve is making millions a year off those digital items. So
yeah, the trading cards to me is such a weird foreign thing. I always have kind of had the same approach to them, which is, okay, this is fucking weird, but I'll sell it, and every once in a while I'll get a dollar off of a game.
That seems to be a common practice for people that don't want to buy into it, but then I see people that are, level 50 and 60 on Steam, and it's that's the thing, I figured, you just use Steam a lot, and you'll end up gaining levels, and it's no, because I've been using Steam the past couple of days, I've been playing games, and, barely anything gets me experience or anything, and it's oh, you basically level up by crafting these stupid badges which need the cards. Actually, just in case there's anyone listening that's not too familiar, the general system is cards are like a like Steam already has achievements just like Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 and everything, but now when you play games for you'll get something called card drops, where each game has a set of what look like collector cards, and for every 5 you get, it looks like you can craft a badge and get 100 experience, which is basically worthless. It's just, oh, look at how many badges I've crafted or something. Like, a level on Steam is kind of worthless.
Yeah.
Unless something like the metagame where you only get more cards for voting for the community picks if you're a high enough level. Like, I haven't gotten any cards from that, even though I've voted a ton of times.
It's interesting because, so, the levels aren't completely worthless. So, what you do is, so, you get passive card pack drops once you're past level 10, I think. So basically what that means is if you sign into Steam every day, there's like a minuscule chance that you'll get a pack of cards, of 3 cards, that you can then sell on the market. So at this point, I get like... sorry. Just from being signed into Steam all the time, I get like a pack a week, which is like a passive income of like 30 cents a week or so, which is really interesting. And like I know that the people who have leveled up their account, like the higher your level is, the better chance you have of getting drops. So... like, I don't know how quickly it goes up, but there's a chance those people with high levels are getting, you know, 30 cents a day, which adds up over time.
It does. It just requires a lot of investment of getting those good cards first.
The ROI is not good. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. So basically, it only has value kind of if you buy into the value of the cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's also, I mean, that's also the thing is you only get limited amount of cards. Like, I didn't realize at first, like, that Halo Spartan Assault, for example, you only get up to 3 cards. So no matter what, you have to trade with other users if you want to be able to craft a badge using your Halo Spartan Assault cards.
Yep, that's where they get you.
Yep. Not all games are like that. Some of them have 5 card drops, but then you get duplicates.
Yeah.
Like, I got duplicates off of Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, and it was like, oh, why?
I believe the theory is that you cannot get a badge just off the passive drops from playing the game. I think that's how it is.
Okay, so I'm selling a card right now. Or I'm putting it for sale.
Putting it for sale? We're going to time this?
Yeah, this is Summer Adventure Card 7. And I just hit the button, so we'll see.
How much did you sell it for?
20 cents.
20 cents. Ooh.
That's about what I was starting to sell them for, too. It started like 40 cents, but they've basically halved value, it seems.
Yeah, what you get on these Steam events is a lot of people who really want the max level badge will buy up a lot of stuff at the beginning. And that'll keep the supply down for a little bit. But as the Steam sale goes on, like as people start getting those cards for 3 community votes, as they start buying more games, like the market just becomes flooded, and by now there's like 30,000 of each card in the marketplace. So
yeah, I know I got cards and stuff up there that I haven't sold as well.
Yeah, my strategy is to just make it 1 cent lower than whatever it's selling at now and take the 1 cent loss just to move it as quickly as possible.
See, whatever it's selling at now, I actually try and reduce it down, so after Valve adds their fee, it matches about that price.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's getting a little too boring talk, I think. that's like,
too inside baseball?
Exactly, way too specific. But yeah, you basically have the trading cards, which kind of act like a second achievement system. Mm-hmm. Except there's now you're kind of forced to interact with other players, but it's like... It feels so pointless because the only, as you said, the only reason to level up is to get more cards, which you can maybe sell, maybe, but otherwise it's just.
It's not that much different than like other digital items that Valve is sort of you know selling in their market, like the keys, the in-game items, stuff like
hats.
That. It's hats in TF2, it's, you know, gun skins in CSGO, it's character stuff in Dota. It all sells very well.
Yeah, so. I could see that. Those at least have in-game application to some extent, but it's still
your
very...
Steam level, man. It's your Steam level. You can brag about that.
Okay, what Steam level are you guys?
I think I just turned 4.
Hold on. Profile.
Yeah, I think I just turned Steam level 4.
Oh, yeah. Steam level 12. Check it out.
I'm 11, and I really don't play the metagame.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to get more to beat you by more on my levels. The highest ranking friend I have is level 75.
Ugh.
Wow.
How many games
does that person own?
I don't know. Let me click on him. Yeah, like, it's so interesting.
I guess I'm still playing the metagame of
he's crafted 136 badges, I can tell you that much.
Oof.
Jesus.
So,
I'm sorry, that's terrible. That's absolutely terrible.
The greatest thing that the metagame does is it makes you talk about the metagame, which makes you talk about Steam, right? So that's what really matters.
Yeah, that's true. And right now, I do really want to talk about the most interesting aspect of the metagame, which is right now, the way this one is designed, is it's sort of, you join up for the adventure game or whatever, and you're randomly assigned to a colored team. I got assigned to Team Pink, so I am
Me
Macho
too.
Man. We're Macho Man Randy Savage, high five.
Yeah.
But you get assigned to the team, like, pink, red, blue, green, or purple, I believe, are all the colors. And basically, throughout the day, as you do stuff like crafting badges and everything, you accumulate points. I don't know if there's any other way. I haven't really paid much attention or read the specifics.
It's pretty much just crafting badges.
Just crafting badges.
So or buying the points from the market.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah. You can buy tokens that are worth a certain amount of points. Now, you can either apply that token to your team, or you can buy steal tokens to steal points from another team.
Yeah, I've heard about that one, at least.
The 1,000-point token cost $16 last time I checked.
Oh. And I know there are people spending money on that shit. The whole reason that this happens is the teams are basically competing, because when it first started, whoever was the winner would get 30 random people from that team would get 3 games from their Steam wish list. Just 3 random games. So you're basically playing the lottery in a sense and hoping your team wins by crafting all these badges and stuff. And if you don't craft a badge, you're not eligible to win one of those 30 games. So you have to be one of those people. Now, Reddit got a whole bunch of people together. Like, forum group or whatever it was? Like 5 million people?
It was several. I don't know the exact number.
So, yeah, millions of people, though, in this one subreddit that basically were organizing each color team would get a certain day. So they made sure every team had a chance to win, which, you know, I mean, what happens is, like you said, there was the cards to steal the points, and then there are cards to add the points. But more so, there are also cards to change teams, which I imagine is how they were getting specific teams in the lead so easily. Because, like, there was a huge gap. You'd see, like, whatever team color was that day would just be so far ahead. So I imagine what would happen would be people would jump ship and they'd go from one color team to the next, which, you know, in some ways is going to be, you know, let's make sure every color wins. And in other cases, it's let me get myself another chance to win. So you have
that is a lot of work for a very small chance to win.
Yeah, a lot of work. I think I don't attribute the swing completely to the Reddit group. I think there's definitely much more than that, because just the sheer number of points that people were scoring in, like, so the last I checked, the Switch team tokens for some of the teams were like $10 just for themselves. So just switching to a team would cost you a decent amount of money.
Yeah. But, that would be how I partially would attribute it, because I imagine a lot of people doing the Steam sale might not even be assigned to a team, or they might not be aware of whatever's going on Reddit, like, at all. So to them, it's just all random.
Yeah, and a lot of it could just be, you know, people with money doing things they can do because they can.
People with money.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, you know, out of, you know, Valve's little competition, people banded together to try and give everyone an even chance. So you have, you know, there's only one possible winner, but every team gets a chance to be the winner.
Yeah, and then, did you see they changed that?
Exactly. What was it? Yesterday they changed it?
Yeah.
Yesterday they changed it, so now there's a first place, second place, and third place. First place is the same conditions, you know, 30 random people get 3 games from the wish list. Second place, 20 random people get 2 games. And third place, 10 random people get 1 game. And everyone else is just a loser. And I was curious to see how Reddit would respond. Evidently, Reddit responds kind of like Lord of the Flies, in which case everyone's just getting savage and fighting for the... Okay, that's not really how Lord of the Flies worked, but... I mean, you get the point, where now it's just like every man for himself kind of a thing. So, Red Team won 2 days in a row, which completely broke what was the intended cycle where Purple was supposed to win. I was wondering if there was going to be some... Like, I mean, I was expecting a bunch of Reddit users to basically just go all math, like raw, hard calculations over here's how we can maximize the potential with the remaining days left so each team still gets an even chance in this manner of winning an equal number of games. That's not at all what happened, and now it's just a typical, you know, race to the first, and... In some ways, a lot of people feel like Valve, you know, reacted negatively, like, oh, people are gaming our system and blah, blah, blah. But I find it more fascinating that once you're able to have more than one winner, people stop cooperating altogether.
Yeah.
And now it really is just every man for himself because, hey, someone could just get second. And
I wonder if any change of rules in the middle of it would have had the same sort of chaotic effect, though.
Possibly.
Yeah, I think the real reason any of that formed was strictly by the first past the post, you know, nature of the competition to begin with. So anything where you break that in any way, I think, would have had the exact same effect.
Because then you have to come up with, like, and you already have a plan. You have everybody on board with the plan. And then when you're forced to change the plan, getting everybody to agree again is...
100% agree. Because now you have to start accounting for who gets second and third every day and stuff like that. And it becomes much harder to get people to buy in to that kind of stuff.
That's the funny thing. That's why I said, like, I mean, especially considering the kind of people that go on Reddit, like, these are the kind of people that will, like, make up mathematical equations for fun or something like that.
And, like, at the beginning, the teams were winning by so much. Like, there was a lot of discussion about, you know, either Valve was cooking the numbers, which I didn't believe because they wouldn't kick somebody so far out ahead, or somebody had found a way to game/cheat the system, and that's why one team was getting so many more points than another. Or it could have been a combination of both, really. But
yeah, and a lot of people were talking about the idea of Valve gaming the system themselves. Yeah.
But that would have been, they would have done it, they wouldn't do it that wrong, in my opinion. So,
well, I also don't think they would have changed things up in the way they did. And that's another question, too. Like, was what they did a response to, like, the Reddit and all that other stuff? Or was this their plan all along that in the middle of things they were going to switch it up?
I feel like it was strictly a response to the fact that the day before, one team won with, like, 1.3 million points.
Oh.
And the closest competitor had, like, 300,000. Like...
Holy crap.
Like, I'm pretty
sure
that's what that day was.
It probably did create a negative for people who the Reddit thing was invisible to. It probably did create a negative community feeling and what's the sense of participating, because...
Yep, that was probably exactly what happened.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised as well in that regard. Especially because, I mean, I forget how many people use Steam, like how many users it has. So like 5 and 6 million, that's like a drop in the bucket kind of a thing. Compared to, what is it, like, do they have, like, what, 50 million, 60 million users?
I would have to Google that.
Yeah. Just to get my numbers 100% correct.
Yeah.
On the worst day of the competition, the blue team won with 1.2 million points, and the closest competitor had 273,000.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Blue team represent.
Now, here is another... Oh, what, are you blue team?
I am indeed. I haven't contributed a single point, though, so it doesn't matter.
No, one thing that I do find interesting, though, is I feel like... Steam has kind of been running out for the sale as the days keep going by. And I feel like, I mean, maybe this is just partially me, because, you know, at first it's like, I just got a new paycheck. I'm going to buy all the games and gift all the games and all that other stuff. And now as it nears its end, it's kind of like, I can't really buy so many things. I've seen a lot of these games repeating.
Yeah,
I don't really care as much.
The repeat is definitely a big thing. Later in the sales, they always start repeating, especially on the daily and flash deals. Like, they're just running low on games. And I think a big part of it is a lot of times you only see sales on, or you only see front page sales on the newest version, like the newest game in any series.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a, like, if you're just looking at the sequels, the ones that came before in the series are a giant piece of Steam's catalog. So when you start taking out the, you know, three Civilizations that came before Civ 5 and the 400 Assassin's Creeds that came before Black Flag, you know, you are really cutting into Steam's catalog pretty heavily.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's, I don't know. I debate on whether it's my jadedness or... Sometimes I think that the deals got just a little bit worse on the Steam sale. Like, right now I'm looking at Civ 5 and it's $7.49. $7.49 is a good price, but in my imagination / memory, I remember getting games that were the latest installment in the franchise about that new for $5.
Yeah.
I think is that, like, I'm not as excited about it now because now my library is full of a bunch of shit, you know, and
that's the biggest thing, I think.
And now there's no urgency because I know that there's going to be another Steam sale. A lot of the same things are going to come up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think too, like, in the first few, like, I just remember, like, the huge excitement because you didn't know, or first of all, in the first, like, the first 2 years, I think it was only at Christmas. So, like, there wasn't the summer, there wasn't the short little spring one, there wasn't the short little one at Black Friday. It was just 2 weeks in December. And, like, that was really interesting because, like, if you don't buy it then, it may not go on sale until next December.
And we also hadn't yet learned how to make assumptions about what was going to go on sale either.
Uh-huh. And I don't remember exactly, but in my memory, they weren't having as many weekend sales because, like, now they have a couple games for the weekend sale, a couple games for the midweek madness sale, a game a day on the daily deal, 20 to 30 smaller games on the weekly sales. Like, games are always on sale on Steam now, where my memory says that in the past that wasn't the case. So it was really, really special when the games went on sale.
I find this interesting because my response, again, is as a first-time Steam sale patron, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, like, even for me, like, the excitement's been wearing down. Like, even tomorrow I get a paycheck, and while I have bills that I'm going to have to tally away, it's like I'm finally going to have money to spend again, either by gifting people stuff or buying some stuff for myself. Like, I'm waiting for the odd box, and I think I'm going to double dip on Resident Evil Revelations, which, that's the funny thing. They show Resident Evil 4 HD for $12 for a game that's, what, like, that's about 10 years old. That is a 10-year-old game for $12.
Dude, it's an HD remix.
But then Resident Evil Revelations is about the same kind of a discount, but that's not on the front page. I think some of it is they're also being selective, and they might be talking with the game publishers themselves, too.
Yeah, so do you know how the pricing structure works for this?
Nope, but I
so, so before last sale, an email linked from a Eastern European developer, and it seemed pretty correct. The Reddit detectives gave it the two thumbs up. But basically, so what companies do is Valve tells them, you know, hey, we want two sale levels. We want one sale that'll be on throughout the whole sale, and then you give us a percent off that'll be if it ever gets on a featured deal, which is a flash sale, a voted deal, or a daily deal. And so, yeah, like, and that's why it's almost too predictable in a lot of cases that you know that if a game is on sale from a major publisher for X percent off, you know you want to wait for a daily flash or a vote sale because it'll always go for more. Because that's just how those games work. or those sales work. So like when Rome 2 was on sale for 50% off from the beginning, I knew that at some point in time it would be on a featured deal because they often work with Valve for featured deals, and that it would be for more. So now it's 60% off today. So it's very predictable, actually, when you start looking at history and trends.
I have to disclaimer that I cannot comment on that.
I told you I pay attention way too much.
That's fine. speaking of inside baseball, and speaking of a dog, how's that dog doing?
Okay, so now what you hear is my other two dogs.
It sounds like they're having a chain fight. Are they chain gang fighting?
So one of them, she just, like, when she's having fun, she's making evil growling noises. So she's down there. I think they're chasing each other or something.
I don't know. It sounds like one's wrapping the chain around the neck of the other one and just trying to guard them with a chain.
And you know, the puppy is really annoying, so.
All right, no, getting back, I mean, I will say that you can tell, like, some games are discounted hugely, and then other games, again, like, the Resident Evil, like, I just feel like Capcom might not have the best idea on how to capitalize on some of these sales, because earlier, like, I was first brought to attention that Resident Evil games are on sale at all, because I have Resident Evil liked on my Facebook page, and they were like, hey, guess what? We have Resident Evil games that are discounted. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So I go, I look in to see what's discounted, and it's like Resident Evil Revelations, $50 normally, $25 for the sale. It's like, okay, you got two problems there. One of them is that you're selling the game for $50 normally. And the second one is that you think $25 is a good deal during a Steam sale, where I can get Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag right now for, like, how much is that?
20.
It's 20 bucks.
20 bucks? And that's a brand new game. Well, actually, that's not even discounted much either.
Yeah, so you can definitely tell there's different publisher buy-in. Like the Paradox games usually go on sale early and huge. But like games like the Activision games, specifically around like Call of Duty, you don't get very good sales on at all.
Yeah.
It's very rare to see them more than 50% off. So yeah. There's definitely differing publisher buy-in.
And let's even look at the comparisons here. I mean, Rome 2 Total War is almost 20 bucks, and that's a game that's $60 still compared to $40 Black Flag. Europa Universalis 4, normally 40 bucks, is $10. So that's a whole 10, like that's a whole 10 bucks cheaper than Black Flag. And then like Resident Evil 4 HD is normally 20. Here we have Dishonored is normally 20, and Dishonored is $5. So I feel like if I do have limited funds and I'm looking at this page, like if I really had to, like if I was like, okay, I have a choice between all these games. Like if I were to compare like old games, like, okay, I could either get Resident Evil 4 for 12 bucks or I can get Left 4 Dead 2 and Dishonored for 5 bucks each. And there you go. Now I have two games instead of just one. But I guess it also depends, you know, on what you're really looking for. Mm-hmm. Like here I am sitting here like, Alice Madness Returns for $5 isn't that tempting. So, you'll find out next week if I actually bought it, people. So,
so I actually get a bitter feeling of disappointment when I see, like, okay, so I have Alice Madness Returns, and I actually bought a physical copy of it on sale for $6, I think. But for some reason, there's, like, this feeling of disappointment and, like, I guess bitterness towards other people who don't have it yet when I see it on sale.
Yeah.
Even though you just bought it for $6?
Well, and it was actually a lot better of a deal when I bought it for $6 because it was, it was a while back. I was playing that at, that was my anti-social game at QuakeCon last year. So like I've had that for a year and a half.
But I
still don't want
that.
Other people to have it.
Because that sort of feeling is why I basically have a 6-month buying cycle for video games. Like, if I'm not going to play it before December, I'm probably not going to buy it in this sale.
Yeah.
And it'll be the same in December before June. Like, Steam has sort of, as a primarily PC gamer, Steam has put me in this 6-month buying habit where I predict this next 6 months, and I don't buy more than I'll play in that time. Just because I know it'll be cheaper in December. So why waste money? Yeah.
Interesting.
Actually, the most expensive game I ever bought on Steam that I can remember, and I'm pretty sure this is correct, is Remember Me in the summer sale last year, and it had just came out, so I think I paid $30 for it. And then I just was, I was playing something else, and I was just too busy to play it, and so I never played it. And now I'm playing it on PlayStation because I got it free with PlayStation Plus.
See, I'm actually going to be giving up PlayStation Plus in order to save money on subscriptions, which, you know, considering how I've been with the Steam sale, is kind of stupid. But, I mean, that's the thing, though. Actually, that's the funny thing, is being part of Gamers with Jobs, and I wonder if, like, I wonder if people that aren't part of a tight-knit game community have this, because on Gamers with Jobs, like, it is such a big thing. Like, I've bought so many games for people that are not me, and then I've gotten games from so many people in return that it's honestly, like, it's stunned me. Like, it still stuns me, because if I go to my library, it's like, okay, here's the 6 or 7 games I've bought for myself, and holy crap, here's the 2, maybe 3 dozen games people bought for me.
Yeah, it is really interesting. Wow. I've been on the receiving end of that before, and it's really special. It's really a cool part about that community that you don't really find anywhere else. At least I haven't. I'm sure it's out there. People in that other community, don't think I'm insulting you. and so... But it is really interesting, like, especially if you're new, like, because I remember it probably would have been, like, winter sale 2012 or something like that when I'd only been on Gamers with Jobs for a couple months, but, like, all of a sudden, like, hey, I'm chatting with people on this forum, and all of a sudden, oh my god, there's games!
Yeah. And
it was a really interesting feeling, for sure.
Yeah, I don't have that kind of friends at all.
You should join Gamers with Jobs, and then
you get
will.
Better friends.
Exactly. I do have a job.
You are a gamer and you do have a job. That's the thing. Like, and I've wondered that, because I've actually, the first gift I actually bought was for an old college friend of mine, and it was, funnily enough, it was the Agorist War game. Like, that was the first thing I saw on sale. I was like, you know, my computer could probably run that. I bought it. I said, well, I did my first Steam sale purchase, and it was this game on a Gamers with Jobs. I gifted my friend a copy because he wanted it. And then people were like, oh, God, I wish you asked about it first, because that game's terrible. So, my first purchase was a terrible game.
What was it?
The Agorist War, which is evidently Record of Agorist War on a console. It's evidently, like, it's not bad at first, but the gameplay gets repetitive and tedious, and there's always the question of how, you know, Japanese game designers portray female characters in certain games. So there's always that kind of concern going on. So I don't know. Like, at this point, it's almost forgotten, actually, as I'm looking at other games, and I've been playing Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, which is the game that taught me my computer is not actually a piece of crap after all. because I hooked my gamepad in, and I may as well be playing on the Xbox 360 or PS3 in my mind, because it's really no different. Which is funny, because before this, I tried... Right when I got my PlayStation 3, I also got Portal 2 on the PS3, which came with a free PC copy. But the PC copy, it ran fine, it ran beautifully, it looked beautiful, until you opened up 2 portals, and then the frame rate just plummeted. So I was like, okay, if my computer can't handle, you know, portals being open, it's probably not going to be able to handle a whole bunch of people on screen firing bullets and stuff. And then, you know, I recently started playing, I got Mini Ninjas off of Steam for cheap, because that's a game I really love, but you can't really get a good copy of it physically. Like, it's usually used, and it's usually beat up, and it's usually still, like, $15 or something. So I got that game, and the frame rate is really inconsistent on it, and there's no way for me to do anything like change the resolution or anything. But then I played Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, it's full resolution and everything, but the frame rate is consistent. The game looks completely fine. Like, to me, it looks just as good as it would on console. I think the draw distance is actually handicapped, but that might also just be the game's art style itself, since everything is so dark. But I'm just playing, like, and I can't tell a difference. So it's like, you know what? Some of my reasons for not being a PC gamer, evidently, I can play games. So now I'm looking forward to, people gifted me the Bureau, XCOM Declassified. I was gifted, I got The Witcher 2 myself, I believe. I was gifted Call of Juarez, Gunslinger, and so many other games. A lot of them indie, a lot of them AAA. I can't even keep track. Hold on, let's actually check my library.
Steam categories is the way to go. Categorize your games, minimize them, only keep a couple visible so you actually play some. Yeah. And so, I would have, so if you would have asked me yesterday at about, let's say, 5 p.m., if you would have told me that story, I would be like, yeah, like, PC gaming's awesome, man. It's sort of like a console, but you can do other stuff on it. And then I spent 45 minutes trying to get my controller to work in Splinter Cell Blacklist, and I wanted to throw my computer off the balcony and go buy a PS4.
So on behalf of the PC Master Race, I would like to tell you how adorable it is to hear you say that it was basically as good as playing on a console.
Okay, the first time I ever really gamed on a computer that was not my brother's was, my dad bought a machine that he assured me was going to be good for several years. The first game I got and installed on it was Aliens vs. Predator 2, and it ran like complete crap and was absolutely no fun. The first upgrade I did was getting more RAM. And then when I graduated, actually, here's the funny story. My birthday present when I because my birthday's beginning of June. So my birthday and my graduation from high school were roughly the same time. My birthday present was a new printer to take to college. And then my graduation present was a new graphics card for the computer. Which I don't understand my parents' logic there, but okay. But I put the graphics card in the computer so I could finally play PlanetSide, because otherwise it ran like crap. So all I've known about PC gaming... Oh, I pre-ordered Unreal Tournament 2004... Got the special edition that was the DVD and realized I don't have a DVD drive. So I had to get a DVD drive in order to run that. And I think I had to get even more RAM at some point. So my experience with PC gaming is always basically you have to put in some other investment. Whereas for console games, like, I bought the machine once and bam, it's good. And I even had this with Mini Ninjas. I had to fix the sound issues. So it's like, ugh, PC gaming. But this... Like, again, Far Cry 3, Blood Dragon ran seamlessly. It was perfect, except for Uplay. Uplay is kind of a piece of shit.
Kinda. Yeah. Being real nice.
Yeah, that is being real nice.
That was the problem with Splinter Cell last night, actually, was how Uplay was interacting with my controller. So
yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
I don't
want to
talk about Uplay right now.
No, I do actually want to give a... I do want to give a note out, a shout-out to Jerry, you know, who's... constantly on here. I don't know if I can remember all the games he gifted me. He gifted me Devil May Cry 4, Enslaved, I believe he did Dust and Elysian Tale, and he did two other games. He sent me 5 stinking games on here, and I just blew my mind. Master Reboot was one of them. Someone gifted me Metro. So I have a bunch of like AAA games.
That was you. Thanks, man. Thanks for remembering my awesome gift that I gave you,
dude.
And remembering it came from me.
As I said, I started with like 12 games on Steam or something. Now I've got like 52. All right, this is insane for me. This is just—I don't know what to do.
Now I have to go see how many games I have on Steam.
What is this going to be like?
234, apparently.
You have a 234 game length penis, okay?
Yes.
Okay, now I hate
That's
you.
That's the metric system,
I
obviously.
I only have 217.
Oh! You are inferior.
I'm going to go buy 50 more games.
Oh, man. But, I mean, well, that's the thing. Like, so many of these were gifts. Actually, I might be underestimating how many I bought myself, because I've had Beyond Good and Evil sitting here. I've had a couple of these sitting here, but most of these I'm looking at, it's like, yeah, these are all brand new. Like, some of them are games I wouldn't, like, I wouldn't have even thought to have bought for myself. Someone finally gifted me FTL, the one game. Like, I now have a roguelike.
You should play FTL. Seriously.
Yeah.
Next week we're talking about FTL. You better play it.
Actually, you wanted me to do you wanted me to do what was it? League of Legends or something, right?
Yeah.
Well,
we could do FTL instead.
Frederick S. He gifted me Dead Island Epidemic beta, so that is probably going to be the first MOBA I ever play. So yeah, we can sit there and we can talk about that.
Yep.
So as we live plan future podcast episodes on the podcast.
It's very meta.
It's very meta, just like the meta game.
Yes.
The whole gifting thing adds a whole new element to it in a community where, like, you're not even adding that much to your library. It's everyone else piling the games on. And you're right. I've already decided I'm going to organize these into, like, pile games where these are games I want to play, I really want to get through, and I don't want to forget, like, I have them on the pile, to games that I really don't know enough about them, I don't know if I'm really gonna care enough about them, and then games where it's like, either because of their design, or because of the fact that someone just, like, FTL is not a game I plan to watch the credits roll on, so that'll just be in the, you know, it's a game that I have folder, where there's no plan to put on the pile, because there's no plan to beat it, just, you know, play it, experiment with it, see how it is, and if I get addicted, then I get addicted. So, we'll see if it's as good as everyone else says. But yeah, this has been a new and delightful experience because it's like people are randomly giving me games, and that's awesome. But at the same time, it's like I'm also seeing awesome games on sale and just being like, you know what, someone's getting this game. Like, I've gifted at least 2 people SteamWorld Dig. I gifted someone Remember Me Today because more people need to play that. I gifted someone The Odd Box because it has Stranger's Wrath in there. Like, it's just like, it's an opportunity for me to say, this game is amazing and you should like what I like. So, I like that element of the Steam sale too.
I'm very jealous about your excitement because all I thought today at noon was, ugh, Left 4 Dead 2 again.
That is surprising. I'm surprised they didn't put it up for $1. It's like, come on. There's gotta be.
Hasn't Left 4 Dead 2 been free before?
Yeah, for like 24 hours or something, or maybe like a weekend. Yeah, there's a lot of copies of Left 4 Dead 2 out there.
Yeah, and they're still trying to sell it. Yeah. You know, this is why I actually joke with people. Valve doesn't make games anymore. They just make Steam.
That is correct.
That is correct. So,
I found some rough estimates for how much they made off of digital items on the market in 2013.
Oh my god.
If you believe a random Reddit thread, his math seems okay. There was 58-ish million transactions, basically $38.9 million, give or take. With Valve's 15% cut, they got about $6 million, which, you know, for a large company probably isn't a ton, but that's a lot of digital hats.
Well, it's also going to be, you know, that's going to be a surge because now everyone's buying stuff.
This was almost a year ago now, so.
Yeah, and
that's also not their only revenue stream either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was like, basically I was talking to a roommate of mine too, because he was wondering, you know, if, you know, like how do these giant price cuts really make more of a difference? And it's like, well, if a game is normally $20 and you're only going to have one person buy it, then you make a percentage off of $20. Like, you basically just got $20. But now if you sell that game for $5 and you get 10 people buying it, you just made $50 instead of $20. So if you have 10 people buying it for every normal, like, one person that would buy it, then you're getting a major influx of cash that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
I mean, well, and there's also the value of, like, it's an injection into your community, too.
Yeah.
I wish I could find the article about Crusader Kings 2 from Paradox and how, like, they saw such a massive surge in sales. Like, they put it on 75% off on a weekend or something, and, like, the surge in sales were so much that like their sales and like DLC for Fort went up a ton afterwards and everything. Like they said that it revitalized the game. It started going downhill and then all of a sudden it's crazy again because it was 75% off and you know tons of people bought it.
Yeah, and you actually put on another. You just mentioned something that I think like that I've brought up when it comes to PlayStation Plus too, because I've known some people say like, oh, what advantage do they get when they put a game on PlayStation Plus? And I've said, well, a lot of the games that get free on PlayStation Plus, you'll notice one of two things: either the game's going to have a sequel coming out soon, or they have DLC that's not included in the PlayStation Plus for free. So they get you to buy the game, well, they get the game for free, play it, and then you want more, so you go and you spend money on the DLC. So I think the same goes for the Steam games, where, in a similar manner, only, again, it's all digital, so you don't have to pay for printing another disc, you don't have to pay for packaging, you don't have to pay for shipping, you don't have to pay for employees, in a sense, or at least not the retail costs. And I do wonder if you take the cost of bandwidth and all that stuff for each individual item and compare it, like, which comes out ahead. And I really feel like with the way digital is taking off, that digital is more profitable in the long term, no matter which way you cut it, than selling a physical copy. Now, Wesley, have you played anything from the Steam sale yet?
Yeah, so the only two things I bought until today was Splinter Cell Blacklist and Saints Row 4, and I played about an hour of Splinter Cell Blacklist last night, which was mostly 30 minutes of the training mission, and then like 20 minutes of me trying to decide what upgrades to buy for my suit. You don't know how long I spent debating, and then wandering around the plane for a little bit. I didn't actually do another mission in the last 30 minutes. It makes me feel a little bad, actually.
This is why I actually keep telling people one of the reasons I love Infamous is because an hour of gameplay gets you a lot of productivity done.
Yeah, so I might actually play some of that tonight, actually do some sneaking. And then I'm also really looking forward to Saints Row 4. And then all I bought today was Rome 2 Total War DLC, because I love that game.
Yeah. Now, see, actually, that's a funny thing, is my roommate has Saints Row 4 for PS3, so I could just borrow it at any time. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I could just, you know, get the game for $10 for myself. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that's really a temptation. And I think that is actually part of the danger. And that's part of the danger of everything being digital, too. Is it's so easy to just be like, add to cart. Whereas, you know, you go to a physical store, you have to stand in line and mull it over and hit that point where you're like, nah, this is a bad idea. Walk out of line, piss off everyone that was behind you.
But my problem is, like, the physical stuff. Like, I have this odd aversion to physical things. And so, like, it's like, ooh, it's digital. Like, I never have to see it. I never have to move it. Like, this is amazing.
Your entire life is one long wait to become incorporeal.
Yeah. Pretty much.
See, I love a physical object, except for that I don't. Like, when you buy a new game, you know, you don't really know if you're going to be proud to own that game in a year or so, I guess. So, when it's untested, I guess I kind of don't want to have the physical object come into my possession. But then if I love it, I do actually want the physical object.
Yeah, that's always my problem with books as well. It's sort of the conversation a little bit. But, like, if it's a book I love, I want the physical copy. But that's rolling the dice to buy it up front.
Yeah.
So I have to rebuy it.
I have basically, over the past several years of being unemployed and other stuff like that, traded in every game I would ever care to trade in physical copy.
Yeah, I only have one physical PlayStation 3 game, and that's Gran Turismo 6.
Really?
Yeah, I've sold everything else. Like, I buy it, I play it, I'm done with it, I sell it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So how many do you estimate have gone through your hands?
Maybe 100.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I used to be way heavier into the console stuff, but
If I go through my Xbox history, it's over 200 games, I think. I counted.
Yeah.
I think.
It's interesting because I'm not one to go back and replay stuff, so digital's sort of worthless for me because I guess it's just sitting there. But Yeah, I just don't go back and play stuff, so I stopped at some point really holding on to stuff.
See, I like the idea of, even if not holding on to a game just to have it there, then I like the option to go back and replay, because sometimes I will, and it's like, man, I really love this game, you know, kind of a thing. Or, like, right now, my roommate and I are slowly going through Gears of War. Like, we just started going through the first Gears of War game, and, you know, it's kind of surprising. It's like, man, this game is a lot of fun. I forgot how much I enjoyed Gears of War, kind of a thing. Because you're used to it at this point. Like, yes, we have four Gears of War games, and we know Microsoft's making another one. They gave it off to some other company. Like, oh, can we get a new IP already? And then you go back and you play it, and it's like, man, now I remember why this game had me so excited in the first place. And why it felt so different at the same time. Because even now, like, even with all kinds of other imitator cover shooters, like, there's a lot of stuff about Gears of War that's just polished. Like, other games are not in that kind of style.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like to go back to my old games, like, you know, every few years and just see if it, I guess it's an experiment on myself to see if it was, did that game just speak to something in my life at the time, or do I really stand behind it as a good game?
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, it's like Wesley, I think I was talking to you a little bit about it, but it's like Extra Life. Mm-hmm. When I did my Extra Life stream and everything, one of the things I did was pick just a bunch of games that I really liked once upon a time and were a bit more obscure or just seemed to have not the greatest reputation. And, like, going back and replaying Project Silphied, going back and replaying Remember Me, like, it was all very much like, man, now I remember why I made such a big deal about these games to begin with. Or in the case of Remember Me, it actually refreshed because after I beat that game, I had a really kind of sour feeling, even though playing through it, I did enjoy it. But it left me with, like, a whole bunch of, oh, this game is so flawed and disappointing in a lot of ways. But then I started playing it again, and it's like, man, I kind of want to keep playing this game now. This game is a lot of fun. And it even kind of goes back to feeling like I did when I was a little kid. And, you know, every once in a while, I would just get up in the morning, put a game into the Super Nintendo for the 50th time, because, you know, didn't have much back then. And I just have a blast playing it, and it was like, man, this is amazing. And now, you like, here we are talking about Steam libraries that are full of, like, hundreds of games, and it's like, I guess another potential discussion in this whole matter is, have these Steam sales, like, not only the quantity of games, you know, but, like, the Steam sales themselves, like, does it all come together to kind of ruin the artistic value and even just value in general of each individual game? Because, you know, why play certain Assassin's Creed games when Black Flag's right there, you know? Like, people already say, you know, just skip the first one, which I think is a shame, because the first one is itself different enough from its sequels that it is worth going back to. But most people are just like, oh no, 2 is the best one, or 2 is better, just skip right to this one, basically. And, like, what is the value then of that first game? Like, was it just, is it just like going back and looking at Windows 95 where it's like, ah, it's so outdated an operating system? I mean, is it that? I mean, and if that's the case, then, like, what really is the value of games as art in that case?
I mean, I guess that's a hard example for me to talk about because that's not a franchise that, you know, I hold really close or anything, or am really familiar with. That's one of my big, like, that's always a franchise that I've always missed, I guess. But all bumbling aside, I guess there's a historical value to it, I think, and I don't buy that just because, you know, 3 in the series was held to be the best, it doesn't mean that the others didn't have any value, or don't still have value.
I can see that. And I think, I don't know, like, I feel like, because I think back to, like, how we define, you know, what were classic games when we first played them, and sometimes it's very nostalgia-driven. Like, a lot of people will look fondly over Super Mario Bros. 3 still. Which is odd because I'm actually one of the ones that like Super Mario World better, which in that case would be the equivalent of just saying go play Assassin's Creed 2 instead of Assassin's Creed 1 in some ways. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know.
I guess, okay, when you put it in terms of Mario, the value, my favorite Mario overall was probably Super Mario World. I also liked 2 a lot, but I do, whenever I get on a kick to go play those old games, I will play every single Mario installment up to the point where I sort of fell off of Mario, and it's, to me, there's value in, like, seeing the progression and seeing what ideas they thought were valuable at different points in time, and I don't know, it's just kind of a different experience throughout the whole series of it to me, like, just the subtle differences are interesting to me.
Yeah, and that definitely carries through into modern times, like, just looking, it's really interesting to see that progression. Assassin's Creed is a great example because, boy, that first game, there was a lot of evolution between the first and the second game, and, like, I always go back to the Call of Duty example, which is a little weird, but, you know, every year people say it's the same game. But if you actually go through and you play the Call of Duties, all 400 of them now, or however many there are, there is evolution there. Like, you can very clearly see concepts that slowly morph over time to get us to where we are now, especially starting at, like, Call of Duty 4 up to wherever I dropped off at. But
it's, which is funny, because technically Call of Duty 3 was the first one where they were trying to annualize it, I think, because Call of Duty 2 came out, then was Call of Duty 3 by Treyarch was the first one that was not by Infinity Ward. And I remember that was the first time I was like, well, if it's not by Infinity Ward, I don't really care. And then Modern Warfare came out, and I was like, oh my god, it's amazing. And you could see the evolution there from Call of Duty 2 to Modern Warfare. But after that, it actually becomes harder to really pick up on.
They're smaller evolutions, and I think this is a lot of what you see now in games with the a lot more sequels coming out. Like, it's smaller jumps. You know, you're not traversing 3 years of a console cycle before you get another one. Or you're not jumping from the NES to the Super NES. Like, you are just getting small alterations in the game's formula over time to bring it to sort of its final form of whatever it is now.
And I have to wonder if that's actually healthy for the games industry. I mean, in a lot of ways, like, I'm playing Assassin's Creed 3 now, and honestly, if I had gone from Assassin's Creed 2 to Assassin's Creed 3, I might be, firstly, more forgiving of the fact that it starts out slow. I mean, I'm fine with, you know, the game starts in an opera house and then on a ship, because it's like, okay, I feel like we're progressing from one story point to the next, and now I'm in Boston and I see a whole city for me to explore, but they're having me do these small little tiny quests so I can keep doing their 5-hour tutorial. And then it's like, okay, now I'm annoyed. Now it is moving too slowly because I don't feel like the setting is no longer changing. Now I'm in this playground and they're not letting me play.
And I think a lot of that is
that I just played Revelations and I played Brotherhood and I played 2. Like, it's after playing 4 of these games, I'm on the 5th one, even though it's called Assassin's Creed 3, and they're still having me do this when I just want to get off the boat and it's like, oh, look, Boston, and I just want to start climbing up towers. I want to do my eagle vision. I want to do all of the extra stuff that I'm used to doing in Assassin's Creed, rather than being told, okay, now here's how we do an assassination. And all that, but it is funny because I did pick up on the fact that climbing feels a little bit different in Assassin's Creed 3, which, you know, Assassin's Creed 2, Brotherhood, Revelations, it all felt the same, but they all felt a little bit different from Assassin's Creed 1. But it's, once you start annualizing it, those changes can in some ways be harder to pick up on, because, I mean, that's the thing, I'm 2 games behind. Because I just, like every time I see, like, now we have Assassin's Creed Unity, and it's like, I really don't care. Like, I can't care when they announce a new Assassin's Creed game, because I know, like, by the time I get to Assassin's Creed 4, they're going to be announcing Assassin's Creed 6, Rebellion, or some crap like that. I don't know.
It's a problem, and it's hard to balance, and I really don't think companies have gotten to the balance yet of being able to have it come out frequently, which obviously they want to do, and it obviously is making them a lot of money, or they would stop, versus adding enough new content to make it interesting to new players, which is where I think like multiplayer games have such a bigger advantage in that regard, where I don't think you have to change up multiplayer games quite as much as you do single-player games, which is where like Assassin's Creed has some issues, I would think.
I thought Call of Duty was a multiplayer game.
It's got single-player, man. Actually, tell anybody, but I actually kind of like the single player in the Call of Duty games. I think it's a fun movie ride.
No, trust me, I love Modern Warfare, the first one, because of the campaign. I played the multiplayer a little bit, and it's like, yeah, it's a game where I die a lot. But, no, I'm very much the same way when it comes to Modern Warfare. And I would like to play Modern Warfare 3 eventually, but it's still expensive.
Gotta find out what happens to Soap.
Yeah. Such a terrible name. But, I mean, yeah, this completely became a different direction turn I expected the podcast to take.
How did we get here? How did we get here?
Everything's
on sale, so we can talk about everything, I guess.
Basically.
Yeah, there we go.
Desperate attempts to also save the conversation when it started to dwindle at the 40-minute mark. But no, I mean, I think that actually is a conversation worth having where what does stuff like Steam, the exact, like, you know, the quantity of games and, you know, these cheap price points, what does that do then when it comes to looking at brand new games come out and how we determine their value? Because like, there are a lot of games that are actually pretty good, like pretty well polished and pretty well, like you could tell they had a lot of effort put into them. And then all of a sudden, you know, people are just like, eh, I don't know. I'll wait until it's like $10 on Steam. And then it's like, well, the development team deserves more than that sometimes, or feels that way at least. So it really does make you wonder, you know, what is the future in that regard of game development, how we view things. But then again, I came back from E3 and I'm like, I'm going to pre-order that game. I'm going to pre-order that game. I'm going to pre-order that game.
It's interesting you say that. So, Steam has obviously trained me because, so, I'm getting a PlayStation 4, for Destiny, mostly for Destiny, but, I started looking at games for the PlayStation 4, I'm like, oh god, I'm gonna have to pay $60 for games again. This is gonna hurt so much.
Yeah, well, I've had to resign myself to that long ago, because, you know, I have a Nintendo Wii U, therefore, I pay money for games, and because they're Nintendo, they don't drop in price awfully quick. Like, Lego City Undercover, like, everyone's sitting there like, oh my god, look at all the Lego games. It's like, oh, is Lego City Undercover? Oh, wait, no, that's Wii U. Like, the one Lego game I want to play, and it's never on sale. It's still, like, $50. It's like, nope, never gonna get it. Like, even this, like, after E3, you could tell everyone was like, well, crap, Nintendo has a lot of games coming, and then they just clearance sales. Hey, Splinter Cell, get rid of that. Ninja Gaiden 3, get rid of that. Mass Effect 3, yeah, $5 on Amazon, get rid of that. Like, all these games, they're running clearance sales on the Wii U, and it's like, oh, great, I can finally pick up Lego City Undercover, $40. Crap. No, I can't. Like, you stupid games.
So what you're saying is now is the time that I should be buying my Wii U.
Yes.
That's actually a pretty accurate statement.
Yeah.
I know they have a deal on refurbished ones now, too.
They have the deal on refurbished ones. They also have the Mario Kart 8 bundle, because Mario Kart 8 is the best Mario Kart in a long time. Probably the best they've ever made. Wonderful 101 was my favorite game last year because it was just a fantastic action game. Super Mario 3D World is fantastic. And I am really looking forward to Bayonetta 2 is coming with Bayonetta 1.
That is why I'm buying the Wii U.
There you go. So you got that coming around. Hyrule Warriors is going to be a mixed feeling thing, I think, because it looks fun, but it also looks like I could play it for 3 hours and then forget about it on my shelf for a while. 5 months later, oh yeah, I was playing this game. So, there's Captain Toad is looking amazing. For people that actually like, you know, I feel like there's a realm of AAA puzzle game that we haven't hit like in full stride yet. Like in my mind, it's like, okay, puzzle games that have a lot of money behind them are Portal, Catherine, and now Captain Toad. But otherwise, it's basically Bejeweled and Tetris and all those other little pocket games. And I'm just so psyched about Captain Toad. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe because these games are so uncommon in their style, that makes them all the more appealing when they do finally come around. So, all right, yeah, Steam sales, Nintendo, okay. All right, I think we're...
That kind of like... Actually, I think you touched on something that might be a good ending point, too, is that in the world where we can have everything or a little bit of everything, novelty still has value.
That is a good point. Novelty will still have value, so people will always value a new kind of fresh take on an idea, which is, of course, where Nintendo comes in best. So... Alright, alright, well, I guess that's the end of our conversation. Thank you guys for listening. Rico, where can people find you on the internet?
On Twitter is probably the easiest place. It's Rika Confesses, R-I-K-A, and then Confesses, just like the word. That's actually how you can find my blog as well. Just Google Rika Confesses.
All right, and then Wesley, I guess you're somewhere on Reddit, buried in there.
Yeah, I'm on Reddit, don't go there. and I'm on Twitter. I've changed my Twitter handle to just be at Wesley Livesay. That's Wesley and then L-I-V-E-S-A-Y. And I actually have a new podcast coming out in the next couple of days.
Oh my God!
It's unrelated to video games. It's a history nonfiction podcast where I'm walking through... the World War One week by week. It starts on the 28th of June, which is just in a couple days, and you can find that at historyofthegreatwar.com. There's nothing there yet, but there will be soon, maybe by the time this episode goes up.
Let me get you in touch with my brother, because he loves history.
Ah, yes.
But, so. Alright, and of course you can find me at the usual places, gamertag.net, youtube.com/user/ramblepack64, which I will update it, I swear. There's a video coming eventually. And of course, let's see, I don't Twitter much anymore, but twitter.com/czazarano, facebook.com/ramblepack64, and of course, you can also support me on Patreon at patreon.com/ramblepack64. So, Ramblepack everywhere. And of course, always check out gamerswithjobs.com. I have several new articles from this month, and I finally have my own column name, Analysis Paralysis. So you can check out this month's columns are Road to Joy, which is a reflection on Mario Kart 8 kind of saving me from a gaming slump. We have The Indieing, which is a reflection on indie games in general, how a lot of them don't necessarily interest me much, but that doesn't necessarily mean, like, that's not a bad thing not to be interested in indie games for certain reasons. And the Dog and Yoshi Show, which was my look back on how, even though I'm jaded at this point, I still find E3 exciting. So, yeah, check those out on gamerswithjobs.com. The music is a remix from the Remember Me soundtrack, so I hope you enjoy that. And see you guys next time. Have a good one. Want to grab Alice Badness Returns.
Be strong. I'm actually probably I may pick up Blood Dragon. I haven't decided yet.
The Blood Dragon.
I assume that's why you picked the music from Blood Dragon.
Someone gifted it to me, and
yeah,
oh my God, it gets rid of some of what I hated about Far Cry 3. It's why, like, I think I mentioned, like, oh, I don't really care too much about Far Cry 4. On the other hand, I really care about Far Cry 4 Blood Dragon 2.
They said they might actually do something like that as well.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Oh, shit. Oh, man. The next, oh, man. This is going to be tough.
What?
The next vote is open world story, Rich, versus yeah. sci-fi RTS. Yep. I'm not much of a fan of RTS or anything, but... Let's see, on open world story, Rich got Skyrim, which has been on sale 8,000 times this whole thing.
Yeah.
Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, Sleeping Dogs, and L.A. Noire, but, like, each of these is also worth gifting, so it's like, you know, I'm going to vote that way.
Yeah.
There we go.
I think I voted the other way, just because Sins of the Solar Empire is one of the best RTSs ever made, and everybody should have it.
But I don't like RTSs unless they're called Ogre Battle 64.
Chris, you're wrong.
I probably am. It doesn't matter. Ogre Battle 64 is the only one for me.